but I think just introducing the concept, as you said, of delayed gratification as early as possible is probably one of the best things that you can teach your children.
Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money, because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and this week I'm chatting to a financial planner and author of a fantastic series of books for kids all about money. So welcome, Gugu Sidaki, to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast.
Thank you, thank you.
Yeah, Gugu, I want to start by chatting about your series of books, my Three Piggies book series, because parents are always trying to find some way to teach their kids about money so they don't make the same mistakes they made. Now, I must say, I love the books. I thought they were so cleverly done. And I also like the way they incorporate worksheets and basic maths into it. I just think putting it together, it really works. But what made you decide to write them?
I'm a wealth advisor. I'm a financial advisor. But a big part of what I do in my business is to teach adults about money. So we occasionally host financial literacy classes for adults. And at the end of almost every single session that I've hosted, the parents, the women have actually come up to me and said, you know, can you teach my kids? Can you put together something for my children or something that I can give to my kids? And that's literally how the book started. I literally got so many requests to distill the information that I gave to the adults to children. So I just decided to put the books together. And I write. It's something that I do enjoy anyway, but never thought to do it for kids until those requests came.
I mean, I was just thinking though, that's exactly it, isn't it? You almost like you're thinking, well, I want my kids to know the stuff I didn't know. I mean, if only I had known this when I was a child. So I think that is definitely that legacy. And I think also, you know, your children start to hold you accountable. And I was interviewing a lovely young woman, 13 years old, had written a book about money. And she said, you know, her dad was saying to me that, you know, when he wanted to buy a car, she said she'd actually read an article of mine about balloon payments. She said, Dad, I hope you haven't taken a balloon payment. So educating your children about money is often quite like helps just to keep that, you know, you in check.
Yes, absolutely. That's awesome.
So I know you're using your experience as a mom to Nala and Ndalo, is it? Your sons and Ndalo. You star in your books. I think, well, Nala's like the main star.
Nala's the star.
She's the star, yeah, which is old enough to read. So she can kind of know the star. It would probably be lost on your son at this stage. But how old is he? Exactly. He's only 1.5 now. Or?
He's four.
Oh, he's four. He's much bigger now. Okay.
So now he knows that he's not the star in the books.
You write more books. I'm sorry, but you're going to have to.
I do.
So, you know, in the your first book, the Save Piggy Bank, you talk about a conversation that you have with Nala, where she goes down a toy aisle and she wants to buy a toy. And that is a great way for you to teach her to save. And I think a lot of parents use that. But I wanted to ask you, like, a personal question. Do you sometimes give in? Like, do you sometimes walk down and say, "Ah, well, my baby, you're so cute today," or "I feel so guilty, work late, you can have it"?
Of course. I think with every parent, I think no parent can tell that they stick to the plan all the time. It is so hard. Sometimes just to buy peace and just, you know, after a long day, you don't want to argue, you know, sometimes you just say, "Yeah, have it." So yeah, absolutely. There are days where I do give in.
Absolutely. And I think that's important because I think, you know, when one is talking to parents, you've got to acknowledge just like life isn't always that easy. And I know with my kids, what I used to do when they were little, I've gone out in a different age group. I've got a 17 and a 21-year-old. So that's another whole set of lessons there. But when they were little, what I'd do is we'd go to the shops and I would tell them up front that they'd get a sweet at the aisle. If they behaved, so that it felt like I was somehow in control, because I knew that by the time you stood in the aisle, I was going to buy that sweet because you're so worn down by then. So at least I'd say, yes, you can have a seat if you behave. So I kind of, always, I think as a parent, sometimes you've got to pretend that you're in charge. That seems to be.
No, for sure. But that's also a form of budgeting if you think about it, because you're discussing upfront how you're going to spend that money. It may not necessarily be ideal because it's a sweet, but I mean, definitely, I think that's also a great lesson for them.
Yeah. This actually, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Budgeting, budgeting ahead of time. I'm going to be building that suite into the cost of my shop. It was cheaper than leaving with the babysitter. So.
Exactly.
And also in the book, and now specifically about the piggy bank, the saving portion, you talked about a piggy bank versus a bank account. So you were using specifically for Nala a piggy bank, and I've always wondered about that as well. Also raising my son's, because like you never seem to have money, especially now. I never ever have cash. So how do you like remember to put the money in, and at what age do you actually go into bank accounts?
Yeah. Well, for starters, they'll remind you. My daughter is six, and she reminds me that I owe her money for whatever it is that she's done for me. So, and I agree with you, it's very hard because I hardly have cash on me, but I have to go draw the money because it's important for the lessons. A lot of the research that's out there suggests that you can start introducing children to abstract concepts such as investing and bank accounts, or things that they can't physically touch and feel from the age of seven. So that's when a bank account is actually going to start making sense for them, even though they can't see it. As long as you explain the concept, you take them to the bank and you show them that you're dropping funds off or whatever, however you choose to do it. But it should work from age seven upwards.
Okay, that's quite interesting, because it was probably around the age of eight that my youngest, I opened his bank account. And I saw quite a shift in him when I did that. And that's what I found quite interesting, was that he, with the piggy bank, he always wanted to spend the money. The money had no meaning to him, because until it turned into some cheap Chinese junk or something, it didn't have meaning. And funny enough, I remember the Mandela notes coming out, and then he wanted to have a Mandela note. That was about that. But when I opened up a bank account for him, then he started, and you know, they're amazing, the banks, they all have apps. So with being able to check his money in his app and all of that, he started to want to save it, because he started to see the numbers grow. So it was quite interesting. Yeah. So I think people, it's different. But I definitely found a bank account got him to be more kind of, more aware and more ready to save.
Absolutely. So, And if you think about it, the funds are physically available. They're in front of you all the time. So it's a lot easier for you to spend when you can see it. Whereas if it's sitting in the bank, it's a little bit inconvenient. You have to get your card. You have to go somewhere, draw it, swipe, whatever the case is. So yeah, for kids, I think it works better as soon as they grasp the concept of a bank account for them to have one.
Yeah. Although I did run into a big problem with my oldest son. So he started, he had a part-time job, and he was earning money from it. And then he kept swiping his card and buying lunch. He was working at a spa, you know. So he'd buy all the chocolates and everything there. And then he wasn't checking on his app to see if he had money. So he was just being hit with 850 bounces left, right, and center. So it took him a while to figure this whole thing out. But I suppose that's what you got to do. Kids have got to
learn. That's a good lesson,
Good lesson. And you know what? Banks are there to make money out of you. You know, you. So how old is Nala now? Because in the book, she's five.
She's six.
But she's six
she's
now.
Okay. Seven in November, and her brother's turning five,
Okay. So you've still got to get to those teenage years and
I'm
looking at how.
Treating them. Treating them. I'm not looking forward to it. I'm dreading it.
I've got two boys, and I have to tell you, the friends with girls, they had a much harder time.
Both. I can't escape it.
No. And I wish you good luck. However, one of the things that definitely worked for me with when my kids became, were teenagers, was actually giving them money for day-to-day expenses. So it's not just about, oh, I've got money to save for a toy or for whatever. It's actually right. You've got to buy your own deodorant, cut your hair, go to movies, all of that with it. And I had such a weird experience this last week. My son's hair, it had grown so long, it looked terrible. And I said to him, I said to him, you're going off to college every day looking like this. I said to him, why don't you go get your hair cut? He says, no, I don't have enough money. I have to wait for. So, of course, he gets his allowance at the end of the month. So it's yesterday, because he got his allowance on the 29th or whatever, he went off and got his hair cut. Exactly. So you know, he's budgeting. He knows he can't afford to have his hair cut this month. So, so, I mean, it's definitely, I think there are ways they are doing it. But, and then, I mean, obviously we're talking very much about just managing money day to day for kids and Nala saving for her doll and all of that. But then there's the next step of investing. And I know for kids, and, you know, positioning it for Nala's age group, you know, 5 or 6 years old, investing is not like what I'd consider investing, which is buying shares on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Mm. Again, investing is often delayed gratification. And I think you've done that very, very well in the book as well. That's the second book,
though.
We deal with that in
the third book.
Oh, third book, of course. Yes, at giving
So, yeah, it's so hard to teach the concept, as I said, of investing to kids when they have to, because now they have to imagine this world, this thing that, and firstly, they have to grapple with money, earning it, saving it, putting it, and then all of a sudden it compounds and you're like, what? I mean, that's a concept that's very hard for adults to understand. So, but I think just introducing the concept, as you said, of delayed gratification as early as possible is probably one of the best things that you can teach your children, not just about money, but just teaching them that, you know, sometimes you just have to wait for things, you know, some of the best things in life you have to wait for, and you're actually going to be raising quite amazing individuals who are not going to be spoiled brats that bulldoze their way through life. So yeah, it's a vital concept to teach children.
And I think Nala wants to go to Disney World or Disneyland or something. So does she really Nala?
She really does. So she's into, I mean, they're always watching Mickey Mouse in the clubhouse and whatever else. And, you know, then the questions come, where are they? Where do they stay? And then you have to explain this Disney World. It's like, oh, can we go? And, you know, and then this box and I show them where they are. And yeah, that's exactly it. She definitely does want to go. Although it does change from time to time because, you know, now there's Durban and there's Cape Town and they've been to both and they love it and they enjoy it. So that's what we're saving towards now. But definitely the plan is to take them to Disneyland at some point.
That's a lot of pocket money. And I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gugu's pocket money too. Yeah, he's going to be a lot of saving. But I mean, at least you've got COVID now to delay the whole thing. You can't travel anyway. So, but also, what I love the way you positioned that in the book. You said, right, well, you can work like really, really, really hard and do like a million more chores, or you can just wait 2 or 3 years and let time help you prepare for it. And I think that's again, I love the way that was positioned. It's like you can have it now, but do you understand what that means? You know, in terms of hard, working harder, you know, all of that, or, you know, and giving up all the other things that you enjoy doing. And I think there's something, as an adult, we could learn something from that.
Absolutely. And kids hate, I mean, I see my son especially, you ask him to do anything, he'll tell you that his finger's sore just to get out of whatever it is you're trying to get him to do. So that again reinforces the delayed gratification concept because, I don't want to do all this hard work now, so fine, I'll wait for what I want for a little bit longer, which is awesome.
Yeah, and I think it was quite, I just thought that was really well positioned, saying, well, you still want to sometimes have treats, so you can't put all your money towards Disneyland. So how about just waiting a little bit longer to get to Disneyland? Yeah. And my eldest son now wants to go to the US next year. We actually have family there. And again, he's having to, look, he's older, so he can actually work a bit. And he house sits and he does extras on movie sets, which of course have all come to a standstill as well in COVID. Hasn't been easy. But it is, you know, also making him, and I've said to him, right, you've got to put a budget together. How much are you going to spend every day? You need to spend every day in the US. There's certain things he wants to do. He wants to go on a dinosaur dig. How much is it?
Oh, wow.
And building a spreadsheet and getting them to learn how to do that. Yeah. And I think we all as parents get those moments. And I think it's so key that we don't just say, here's the credit card. You
know?
And we guide them.
Yeah, and it's so easy to just want to give them the world. I mean, every parent wants to do that for their child, you know, to give them a life that's better than what they had. But you're actually doing them a disservice, funnily enough, by giving into everything that they want. So I think it's great that you're putting spreadsheet together for him. He needs to learn. And he's to spend his own money. Nobody else's.
Exactly. It's he's got to learn that. And I think and I think it's such an interesting point that you made about doing your children a disservice. And, you know, I remember a friend said to me, I don't see the point of pocket money because I can afford to give my kids whatever they want.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? It's like saying I don't believe in extra math lessons or something. Or like, you know, there's not a single other skill out there that parents are spending money. Oh, they put them in ballet lessons and extra maths and, you know, what Kumon lessons and all the rest to develop their skills. Yeah. But then when it comes to money, you don't think that's important. You don't see this as a way of skilling your child. And I think that's, you've got to reset it.
Yeah, and people forget that, you know, it's so easy to burn through all that money. It may seem like it's enough now, but when you're no longer there as the adult to look out for your children, it's very, I mean, we know the stats are there that money barely makes it through to, is it the third generation? So once parents have passed it on to their children, that's usually where it stops, simply because they haven't equipped their children with the necessary skills to manage their money.
Yeah, and I see adults making like fundamental mistakes about how much money they need to live on. And we see this even in retirement. People come to retirement and think, oh, well, this is enough money. They don't do cash flow analysis. They don't do, you know, anything like that. So, you know, if you haven't at least, you know, at least if you taught your child this stuff, you know, you over time, you know, they'll manage their money better. But talking about, you know, parents as well, I mean, you, that's who you generally deal with, right? Your clients are not 5-year-olds. So maybe, but soon, but not now. And you, as a financial planner, you deal with people with money, obviously, coming to invest. And do you have these conversations with your clients? What do you?
Yeah, definitely. So a big part of advising our clients is family responsibility. So a lot of my clients are Black and female, not all of them, but a lot of them are. And a lot of the time we have conversations around looking after extended family members, because that's a very big reality for a lot of our clients. So looking after parents, looking after siblings and whatever else. And so invariably the conversation around children and how to equip them with better life skills when it comes to money always comes up. And we always have this conversation. And it's really is gratifying to note that people are wanting a better and a different life for their children when it comes to matters of personal finance, because so many of us are fumbling our way through this. And we know that that's not the way we want to live our lives. So yeah, we're definitely having those conversations with our clients.
And what mistakes do you pick up that parents are making with their kids, apart from giving into them?
Exactly what you alluded to earlier with your friend, is that we so desperately want to give our children a better life than what we had, and sometimes to their detriment. And a lot of parents are guilty of that. I mean, I'm often guilty of that as well. I mean, even with all the knowledge that I have, even with all the books that I've written, so easy for you to want to just give in, just to put a smile on that face. And that's usually the first issue. And the second that I find quite often is that people don't talk. I mean, as adults, we don't talk about money with each other, with our spouses, with our partners, with the people that we are financially responsible for. And that leads to so many issues and so many difficulties. And so I find that parents almost feel like they'll be overexposed if they talk to their children about money. Now, I will say, you know, you don't have to tell them that you make exactly what you make. But give them an idea, you know, bring them into your confidence, give them an idea of how much you make, and give them an idea of how much it costs to run your household. And kids are incredibly smart. So if you tell them that 100 Rand is coming in and 90 Rand is going towards everything that we need, guess what? We don't have an extra 20 or 30 Rand to buy that doll that you want, and they get it. You know, I think we tend to be so scared to be overexposed and so worried that people are going to think that we don't have money and that we just shut down and we don't talk to our children and we don't talk to our spouses and our people about money. So I think one of the most important things that you can do is have the conversation, you know, have a constructive conversation about money with the people that you love.
And your value system. I mean, that's something we've really worked on in my family as well with my kids, is to talk about our value system and to make sure that our money is reflecting our value system. And you know, my kids know I don't like car debt. And they'll know that we'll pull up to fill up a petrol and there'll be a really, really fancy car. And my son looks at this, look at that car. He says, he's got car finance. So the reason we don't have car finance, because there's other things I want to do with my money than pay off an extremely expensive car. So we have those conversations, and it's very interesting, because my son is my younger one's he's one of those kids that takes on a lot. Like, he listens a lot, and he said one day, Mom, you know, have we paid off the house and the car? Like, could anyone take it all? And those are important conversations to have. And I mean, you know, we still have a mortgage on our house, but, you know, I told them, I said, listen, well, first of all, we've got life insurance in place if something happens to us, but it's not, our house is not something that we couldn't, you know, pay off if we needed to cash in something or whatever it is, or we'd sell it. Or, But our cars, don't worry, we've got our cars. Cars are done. We don't have the car finance. So, you know, and I find that being able to have those conversations with my children and make them feel safe. And they ask me, both my boys have asked me, what happens if we die? If my husband and I die. And, you know, you've got to be
prepared. Good question.
Have those question answers. And they've seen our wills. We've gone through them. They know that their aunt's going to look after them. Then they wanted to know, do they live with the aunt or they live in their house? So we've had that conversation so that they have, it takes away fear. And I think when a parent doesn't want to talk about it, it can just build up fear within
anxiety.
The child.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I think also just to take it back to the clients who are looking after extended family members, it takes away so many of these unrealistic expectations that people have of other people's money, you know, so that when we're all sitting down, we're all on the same page and everyone has an understanding what's going to happen in the event of, you know, the breadwinner not being there. It takes away so many issues. And I think it really is crucial.
Yeah. I'm telling you, that sense of relief. I think people just get, Gugu, the sense of relief that you have when your finances are in order. Yeah. I promise you would run right away to Gugu and go get your finances in order. And I want to talk to you about that because, and just, we've been talking about kids, but I actually also want to talk about about financial planning because I'm getting queries every day from people. Can you help me with my money? So, and I don't do financial planning because it's enough with my other parts of my life that I deal with. Do you think that the role of the financial planner has changed? Because people are not, you know, some people are coming with financial difficulties. So what do you think the role is of what should somebody expect if they came to a Gugu or came to a financial planner? What should they expect?
I think there definitely has been a shift in how we're dealing with clients and what clients can expect to get from us. I think, you know, gone are the days where the only conversation that you have with your financial advisors about products. Anybody can do that. We've got the advent of robo-advisors. Google is such an amazing tool that all you need to do is just punch in, you know, a couple of words in there and it'll give you everything that you need about factual information. So about products and platforms and things like that. So that's not terribly difficult. I think the role of a financial advisor is twofold. Firstly, it is to give the technical expertise because that's what we're trained to do. We are trained to understand the products, the platforms, legislation, all of those things, and as and when they change, how it affects our clients' lives. And that, in fact, I was having a conversation quite recently with a client about that, is that my job is to make sure that all of that stuff still makes sense for my clients and to translate that in a way that makes sense to them. That's the technical aspect. You can do it yourself. Nothing stops you from doing that, but it's just time consuming. And there is the possibility that you won't do it in the way that you're supposed to because you're not necessarily trained to do it. And that's the first reason why you would go to a financial advisor. The second, and I think something that's become more and more important as we get to understand the world of personal finance and how it affects us is behavioral management. We are in the business of behavior as financial advisors, because as we know, money is emotional. Money is emotions. Emotions are money. All of us are so emotionally attached to our money and that we behave very irrationally when it comes to our money. I mean, it's very easy for me to manage my clients' money because I don't have an emotional attachment towards it, right? I know exactly what I need to do in order to get my clients to the perfect place. But if I were to manage my own money, the situation would be very different. And that's exactly why you would come to see a financial advisor, so that I can hold your hand, I can talk you out of the worst possible decisions that you could ever make with your money, and just to keep you on track, to talk you through all of those issues along the way. And it's a long-term relationship. So it's not something that we do now and then that's that. You know, we're going to have COVID. We're going to have retrenchments. We're going to have earthquakes. We're going to have floods. We're going to have so many things that are going to affect you, your thoughts, your emotions, and your money, that you constantly need that your hand held throughout all of that. And that's ultimately what we're here for, over and above the technical expertise that we provide.
You know, you were talking about the worst mistakes, and I actually did have someone on Twitter, and we spoke about this before, Gugu, and you and I were chatting recently about social media. But anyway, I did have somebody coming to me saying, you know, he's got a bit of extra money that he could put towards a car, or should he pay off his house? Because the only car he feels he wants to drive a 600,000 rand car. So, not giving financial advice, but I just said to him, you know what? Think about this for a moment. What will the car be worth in 5 years' time? What will your house be worth in 5 years' time? So let's
don't
just
do it.
So if you just have to stop a man doing that, you will have saved him a fortune. So sometimes.
Yeah.
And maybe just to end off, Gugu, because that is one of the things that people say is, yes, but do I need to have a lot of money to go see a financial planner? So, I mean, I don't know how your practice works, but I mean, I suppose everyone has different practices. You know, is a fee based? You know, can you pay for time? You know, maybe you're 30 years old, maybe you're still building up your assets. How should you engage?
Yeah, you're right. Every practice works differently. In fact, when we started, we had quite a high minimum investment amount that our clients had to have before they could engage with us. And then we realized that we founded our business on the back of the fact that we are wanting to help people. And a lot of the people that need our help don't have that minimum amount. So we've done away with that, but we do have specific fees that we charge. So we have a structuring fee that we charge. So in other words, to have a conversation with you about what it is that you've got compared to where you're trying to get to, and then to sort of figure out how you're going to bridge the gap between the two. And there's a lot of stuff that goes in there. So we charge a rand amount for that structure, for that structure. And then you've got the option to implement it with us or to take the plan, sit on it, put it under your bed, implement it somewhere else. It's completely up to you. But if you do want us to implement it, we then charge an ongoing advice fee, because then there's ongoing management of your investments to keep you on track and to give you reviews and all of those things. But to chat to a financial planner, you absolutely do not need any assets, because if we talk about if we clarify what the definition of financial planning is understanding where you are, understanding where you're trying to get to, and bridging the gap. How are you going to get there with what you've got? And it doesn't, nowhere in that definition does it say you need to be a millionaire if you want to be a multimillionaire, and therefore let's help you. So financial planning is for everybody. In fact, everybody should engage the services of a financial advisor, because that gives you the most incredible amount of insight. And you get to understand how much work is still needed, how much time it's going to take you to get to where you're trying to get to, and all the things that you need to have in place for you to be able to reach your goals and all of the things that you are wanting for yourself. So everybody should have one. Even the 25-year-old who's earning 5,000 rands a month absolutely does need to have a conversation with somebody about their money.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I must just tell you, I mean, obviously I know a lot about money. I write about it. I've worked in the industry, and I have a financial planner, because I need someone for that exact thing that I bounce off. And I'll say to Bokka, you know, this is what I'm thinking. And he will give me his perspective. And I find that he also has my will and all the stuff and all the things that I need, you know, should something happen to me. So I think for me that is, has always been a very important part of my financial plan, is having someone to actually share and bounce off my ideas.
Absolutely. And so often I get a phone call from a client, and all they want to do is just ask a question. You know, what do you think about? And I'll give my opinion. They're like, oh, okay, thank you. Chat next week. You know, and that's a great sense of comfort for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like having your GP, you know? It's the GP for your medical money.
On call. Yes.
Well, Gugu, thanks so much. And maybe you can just let people know where they can get the Three Piggies book series, where if they wanted to buy them for their children and start that conversation.
Sure. The books are available on our website, which is www.mythreepiggies.com, and it's the number 3. You can also, if you want to physically go to a store in Johannesburg, you can go to Book Circle Capital in Melville. I think it's called 27 Boxes there. That's where our books are stocked. And you can also get them online, I think Takealot and Amazon. So if you just Google the book titles, you'll be able to find them there as well.
Fantastic. And thank you for chatting to us. And I'm looking forward to the new series with your son when
sure. No pressure. Nice chatting, Maya. Thank you.